get down to it, how many sources one can find which are relevant to this topic of surrogate motherhood in halacha. One would think that there is should be a paucity of sources, but really that we have quite a few things which are relevant to this issue. As a matter of fact, so many I don't think we'll be able to get through all of them tonight, but we'll try. The first issue, which is relevant to surrogate motherhood, comes completely out of left field. There's halacha in Torah. Lo sevasho gedi b'chalev imo. We all are familiar with that halacha. That halacha teaches us that one is not allowed to cook meat with milk. The question is, though, what kind of milk is one forbidden to cook with meat? It says in the pasuk chalev imo, that obviously does not mean that one is not allowed to cook a goat in its own mother's milk, but in any other milk you're allowed to cook it. No, obviously you're not allowed to cook a goat or a cow or anything of that sort in any milk of a kosher animal. However, why does the pasuk say b'chalev imo? Chazal tell us that it means that it has to be milk from an animal which is roi lios aim, which is suitable to me, a mother, as opposed to milk which might come from a male animal, as opposed also to milk which comes from an animal which has already been killed. If milk is somehow removed from the udders after the animal is dead, since it's no longer roi lios aim, it cannot be a mother anymore at that point, that milk is not under the category of chalev imo, which the Torah banned it to cook with meat. The question is like this. Rabbi Akiva Eiger brings up this question here on the top of the first page. He asks the question, we have a well-known halachic principle, which is that an animal which is a trefa, by that we don't mean an animal which is not kosher, but a kosher animal which has a mortal wound from which it will die within the next 12 months, cannot bring a calf to term. It can conceive, but it cannot bring that calf to term. It will not be able to give birth. It doesn't have enough life force left in it to naturally give birth to that calf. So the issue is like this. The question is then the milk which comes from this animal, which is a trefa, which has a mortal wound, considered to be chalev imo or not? Is the mother animal considered to be, in fact, a mother animal from the time of conception? And since a trefa can conceive, it's already considered to be in the category of a mother. Or is a mother only defined by someone who can not just conceive, but also give birth? And since a trefa animal cannot give birth, so therefore, what would we say? We would say that milk which comes from such an animal does not fall into the parameters of the iser of lo sevasho gedi b'chalev imo. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger asks this question, and he wants to say at one point, although he doesn't come to a solid conclusion, he would like to say at some point that the milk which comes from an animal which is a trefa is in fact considered chalev imo, and one does transgress this sort of lo sevasho gedi b'chalev imo with the milk which comes from this animal which is a trefa. Now, if we take Rabbi Akiva Eiger as the basis for our discussion, then it comes out that who is considered to be a mother, or better put, when is motherhood determined? At the time of conception. Oh, so if that's the case, let us view our issue. In the case of surrogate motherhood, one woman conceives the child, the embryo, and the embryo is then implanted in another woman's womb to be brought to term and to be born. If, in this case, we apply Rabbi Akiva Eiger, we would come to the conclusion that motherhood is determined at the time of conception, and therefore the mother who conceives, or whose egg is used to conceive the child, would be considered to be the mother of the child who's subsequently born, despite the fact that the development took place in another womb, not in the womb of the mother who donated or gave or had the egg conceived within her. That's one way of looking at it. That's Rabbi Akiva Eiger. On the other hand, a very interesting approach expressed by Rabbi Yosef Engel, who's also a late Achron. Rabbi Yosef Engel brings down Rashi and Megillah. We have a pasuk which we all know from the Megillah's Esther, which says, by Esther, Vahi omenes adosa baz dodo, but ki ein lo av v'eim, uvimosa v'yavimah l'kocho mordechai lo labas. right? And Mordechai was brought up Esther because she had no father or mother. Now, what does it mean? Who do you have? Where do you have anybody who doesn't have a father or mother? Everybody's got a father and mother. Otherwise, they're not human. They're something else, right? So how can you say that Esther didn't have a father or mother? So here it brings down here, Rabbi Yosef Engel's on the bottom here, where I have Klal Dalet. Of the absolute Uber Shmeyov, Rabbi Yosef Engel's issue is really where the father of a fetus is already called the father. Ein Rash Megillah, Hodom Rasham, Uvamos Avia Vimo Lomeli, Haksik Parke Ein Lovain. It says that she didn't have father and mother. Why does it say again, Uvamos Avia Vimo? Om Rabbi Acha. Rabbi Acha said, Ibarta. The moment she was conceived, Meis Avia, her father died. Yilodita. The moment she was born, Meis Avia, her mother died. Uvarashi, and Rashi explains, Ibarta Mesavi, the moment she was conceived, her father died. Nimtsa Shaloha Yola of, so she didn't have a father. Misha Sharoi Li Koros Laav, from the time that he could have been called her father. Ukshiola Dasa, and when she gave birth, Mesa Ima, her mother died. Velo Nires Li Kros Aim, and therefore she was never suitable to be called a mother. So what do we see here, says Rabbi Yosef Engel? When is a father called a father? From the time of conception. Why? Probably because, Rabbi Yosef Engel says, that's when his role is completed. He no longer is an active participant in the act of bringing this child into the world. From here on in, he's passive. So therefore, then, at that point, he's already called father. When is a mother called a mother? Only, we see here, from the time that the child is born. Prior to the child being born, the mother is not considered to be a mother yet. Rabbi Yosef Engel explains, why should this be so? He says, he bases it on a concept which is known to us throughout Shas, called Ubar Yerech Imo. The child in its mother's womb is considered to be literally part and parcel of the thigh of the mother. In other words, it's not distinct from the body of the mother. If it's not distinct from the body of the mother, so therefore, what is the status of the mother vis-a-vis the child? One and the same. It's not yet mother and child. It's mother and mother. It's the mother and a piece of her body. When is the child considered to be distinct from the mother, so that the mother can be considered to be the mother of a child? Only at the time of birth, when the fetus leaves the body of the mother and becomes a distinct human being. So therefore, going to Rabbi Yosef Engel, we see clearly, based on his interpretation of Rashi and Megillah, that what determines motherhood, or when is motherhood determined? At the time of birth. So in the case of a surrogate mother, when would the motherhood be determined? At the time of birth as well. At that time, it's not the mother who was the egg mother, so to speak, who is giving birth, but rather the one who provided the womb. Oh, if that's the case, so she would be considered, according to this interpretation, the mother of the child. Yeah.
Am I misunderstanding? It sounds to me that Esther's mother died when she was
in childbirth, right.
So,
who says? How biologically, yes. Halakhically, yes. But in terms of the term mother, Binyamin never had a person whom he could call mother. Yeah. In other words, technically it was his mother. In terms of halakhic parameters, we cannot consider this to be a mother in terms of whatever halachas of motherhood might apply. Now, really, there aren't any halachas of motherhood. What? But now, Yosef. Anyway, it's the rest of the Chubnei Yisrael. It's not just Yosef and Yamin. It's supposed to be Ephraim and Menashe. It'll be Ephraim, Menashe, Keruah, Shimon, and Yehuli. Besides that, that's all agadic. I mean, a lot. See, that's a. It's a Tanakh. It's not halachic. We're going to say that a lot of the Bible, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, it's printed on page 5. He says, almost all of the poskim tend in matters like this to mix together firm halachic proofs with questionable quasi agadic proofs. So, of course, the poskim in Tanakh is not agadic, but it's not halachic either. It's something which can be. A lot of nevuahs are metaphors and allegory, and that could also be. But now it means all of them. Yehuda as well.
Elo Aviyin.
What?
Where is Elo Aviyin?
No, we're not basing on the Pasuk. We're basing on the Rashi. In other words, you're right. The Pasuk itself, where we just have a Pasuk without a Rashi on the Gemara, then I would talk and not be able to learn anything from the Pasuk. But Rashi is saying, why did it, what's the pshat in the pasuk? Why does she not have a father? Why does she not have a mother? Because the father is only called a father from the time after conception, and she died, the father died right at the time of conception. And the mother is only considered a mother at the time of birth, or right after the time of birth. But, you know, Lamaisa, your question is a valid question, because the mother must have survived the birth for a few seconds, right? So if the mother survived the birth for a few seconds, what does it mean, ain la aim? Right? Obviously, she had a mother for those few seconds. So I think what we're really learning out of Rashi here is that even though... What?
Sometimes they die.
Yeah. They die before?
Yeah.
Oh, that could be. Maybe she died a little bit before, and they still managed to save the child. Whatever the case may be, we see from Rashi that whatever the pshat and pasuk is, Rashi feels that we only call a woman a mother from the time of birth. Now, it's very interesting. All that love, which can you explain this way? You know, it says in the Torah, also vespino losish chatu v'yom echad. You're not allowed to shech the parent and the child animals in the same day. Now, literally, that means the father and the child, but we all know that that is not, even though that's the literal pshat and pasuk, most poskim hold that that's not the way we paskin halacha lemaisa, because the father of an animal is not considered to be a halachic father. Rather, it means the mother and the son or the daughter. You're not allowed to shecht in the same day. Okay? So, the Rambam has a question. Rambam's question is, how come you're allowed to shecht a pregnant cow? When you shecht a pregnant cow, you're shechting the mother, also vespino, the mother and the child in the same day. Right? Because there's... What? Oh, so that's the answer. The answer is that since upar yerechimo, it's not considered to be distinct. In other words, she's not considered to be a mother vis-a-vis the calf until the calf is born. So that's why you'll have to shech the animal. So this is also would be a similar idea, a similar proof to say that the name mother does not devolve on the woman until the birth actually occurs, and whoever gives birth is therefore to be considered the mother. However, the Rabbi Yosef Engel does point out that the Maharsha learns differently. The Maharsha says, and I don't fully understand this Maharsha, it's photocopied if you want to try your luck at it. The Maharsha explains why we have a pasuk which teaches us that, we have a pasuk which teaches us that anybody who flatters other people overly much is considered, even the fetuses in their mother's wombs curse him, as it says, La Rasha, Omer La Rasha Tzadik Ata. Somebody tells an evil person that he's a tzadik, Yikavu Amim, will be cursed by nations, and Yizamu Lumim, and will be tested by Lu'umim. And the Gemara says, Ein Lu'um Elu Barim. What is a Lu'um? A Lu'um is a fetus. How do we know that? Which pasuk in Chumash? Lo'mi Yamatz, right. By Yaakov and Esau, and they're fighting out in the womb, it says, Lo'omi lo'om yematz, right? So literally means one nation over another nation. So here we mean, also, a fetus, we see that a fetus is called the lo'om. So says Marshall, why is a fetus called the lo'om? The exact opposite of what we've been saying till now. He says, because in the womb, the fetus is only considered to be a relative of the mother, and not of the father. Exact opposite. And that's why it's called a la'om. Why? Because what determines what nation a child comes from? The mother. So that's why the fetus in the womb, when it's only connected to the mother, it only has a mother, not yet a father until it's born, is called a la'om. It has relationship to the mother who determines the nationality, and not to the father who only determines the tribe. Right? So that Marshal says the exact opposite of the way we've been learning, but Rabbi Yosef Engel says, what can I do? Oh well. Anyway, moving right along. There's another Gemara, which seems to be pretty explicitly a proof that the birth mother, the mother who provides the womb, is in fact the true mother in Halacha and not the mother who provides the egg. Why? We have the Gemara in Yevamah Stav Tzad Zayin Beis. The Gemara in Yevamah is, I'm going to try to read as little as possible inside because it's all in Hebrew, but you can follow it along. It's all photocopied here. The Gemara says like this. Gemara says if you have a mother who's not Jewish, and she's misgayer mid-pregnancy, She converts to Judaism mid-pregnancy. And lo and behold, when the children are born, they're twins, born to a Jewish mother. When they were conceived, they were not yet Jewish. Even though it's the same father who conceived both of them, they do not have halachic connection to the father. The father's not their father that they should inherit him. The father is not the father that there should be a din yibum, if there's whatever later on, if one of the boys dies childless, etc., etc. But, says the Gemara, there is a halacha of Eshes Och, that one of the twins is forbidden to marry the other twin's wife if and when the other twin dies or divorces his wife. Wait a second. It's true that Eshes Ach can follow in a case. In other words, one can be forbidden to marry one's brother's wife, even if it's only a half-brother through the mother. But here, if we take mother to be defined at the point of conception, the mother was also not Jewish. So when you have a parent which isn't Jewish, two children of that parent are considered to be not related to each other later on with their megayer. Gershin is gayer, kekatan shenola dami. When a ger converts, it's as if he starts fresh. And the children of a ger also start fresh. In other words, they're not considered to be related to their mother, strictly speaking, halachically. If that's the case, how here can I say that later on, after the gerus, there is a chiyuv of Eshes Ach, that each one is forbidden to marry the other one's wife, midoraisa? It must be that what determines the motherhood, and mimele, what determines whether the isra of Eshes Ach of a brother's wife applies, the point of birth. In other words, who is considered to be the mother? Not the goya who conceived the children, but the Jewish lady who gave birth to them. We see clearly that we follow in these cases the mother who gives birth and not the mother who conceives. It's a deraisa. Eshes Ach here, it says chayev mishum Eshes Ach, then you get put to death for it. Much more stringent. It's not in the Siddur Rabbanan. Now, the Gemara is saying like this. Gemara says that in a case where the woman was misgayer in the midstream, where she already had the two twins in her womb, then, nonetheless, when she could later on gives birth to them, and they grow up, they're chayev on each other's Eshes Ach. They can't marry each other's wife. So if that's the case, says Reb Zalman Chaim Goldberg, who brings this down, you have clear-cut evidence that what determines the relations between the mother and the children, and that the children should therefore be considered to be brothers, not the point of conception. At the point of conception, they're all goyim. They're all goyim. The later on they convert, any prior relationships, how biologically, family relationships, are all severed and disconnected and don't count anymore. From the fact that I see them midoraisa, these two kids are considered to be brothers because they have a common mother. It must be that the status of motherhood is only determined at the time of birth and not at the time of conception. Therefore, if the fetus or embryo is transferred from one mother to another mother who gives birth to it, when is the motherhood determined? Only at the time of birth, not at the time of conception. Okay? Now, this is true in halacha.
In other words, if she was not megayer and the two children were megayer later, there would be no problem.
There would be no Eshes Ach, right? There would be no Eshes Ach. Now this is true. It's interesting in halacha, even though we paskin halacha ma'isan yivam estafani chesam and aleph that uber lavi arachimo. Okay, we paskin uber is not considered. It's not contradictory to what Rabbi Yosef Engel was saying before, because it could be that uber is considered to be arachimo, part and parcel of the mother vis-a-vis certain halachos, and not part and parcel of the mother vis-a-vis certain other halachos. It's not a contradiction, because obviously there are various different gradations of what's considered to be part and parcel and in what respect. But in any event, we paskin that in terms of uber yerachimo, uber's lav yerachimo. And therefore, when the mother converts, the only reason that the child is converted is because the child is considered to be converted together with the mother. It's not that the child or children where they're gerim. Oh, we're children, we're their twins. It's not that the child or children is part and parcel of the mother, and therefore when the mother converts, all parts of her body are converting together, but rather, when they went into the mikveh, three people went into the mikveh together. The mother and the two kids. Ubar lav yarachimo. It's not part and parcel, but nonetheless, the tefillah works for all three. Oh, if that's...
They were there for the choice when they become...
Right, they might be ger katan, and therefore when they're 13 year old, then they might be able to... what's the word?
But in English.
Reject their geirus. Very difficult English word. In any event, despite the fact that we paskin uber lav yerchimo, we paskin this way, that when they're born, there is a chiyuv aveshesach. So you see a very, very stark dichotomy here, very interesting distinction here, that although on the one hand they require geirus, and it's only that they're megayer because all three of them went to the mikveh together. By the way, this is halachically, even though the water doesn't penetrate the mother's body, but since that's the normal, you know, just like you're allowed to go to the mikveh with your mouth closed, you don't have to have the water touch your teeth, the same thing, the water doesn't actually have to touch the fetuses, and still consider it to be halachically as if the fetuses themselves were toivel. It's not a chatzitza. Yeah.
How do you know that that's the reason that their geirus is good? Maybe
separate to... I'm saying, Tosafot says in a couple of places. You're right. If not for Tosafot saying in Ksuvos Daf Yud Aleph and here in Yevamos, we wouldn't know it, but l'maisa, that's what Tosafot says. So in any event, despite the fact that we pass that, nonetheless we pass that there is a chiyuv aveshesach. So we see very clearly that we go after, in terms of family relationships, in terms of motherhood, we follow the time of birth, not the time of conception, nor any time in between. However, there's a very strange case in Chulin Daf Ayin Amud Aleph. Very, very strange case, which seems to indicate the exact opposite. The Gemara Chulin Daf Ayin Amud Aleph says, has a case like this. It's on page 3. Again, I won't read it inside. The Gemara says, you take two animals. You have to be, obviously, a very expert shepherd to do this. You take two animals, and you put them back to back, obviously, and you connect their two wombs together. And somehow or another, I don't know how you do this, you manipulate the fetus so it goes from womb one to womb two. Okay, it goes from Spot to Fido. But I don't think those are cows' names. But in any event, somehow or another, you transfer from one cow to the other cow, right? The question is, now, when the fetus is eventually born, whose peter rechem is it? In other words, the halacha is, of course, that the firstborn male animal is considered to be a bechor and has a special status of kedusha, has to be brought as a carbon, etc. So this is a firstborn animal from either cow. Whose firstborn is it? Is it the firstborn of the cow number one, or is it the firstborn of cow number two? Okay, let's see it inside the Gemara. Gemara says here on page 3, where I have that arrow, Hidbik shnei rechamim, v'yotza mizeh. You put the tombs together, and the fetus went from one womb to the other womb. Mao, what do we say? Didei patar, its own womb, it opens, and it's the b'chor of its own womb. The lav didei lo patar, that womb which is not is, its womb. In other words, the second animal is, it's not the peter rechem, not the b'chor of. Oh, Dilma the Lav Diday Nami Patar, or will it also be when it's born from the second womb, would also be the Peter Rechem of the second animal, says Gemara Teiku. We don't know the answer. Probably never happened. But so we don't know what the answer is. What? Today it could happen, right, but then it probably never happened. So in any event, what do we see here? Gemara says explicitly, who's considered to be the mother? Diday. Who's the mother of the fetus? The first one. We're sure about the first one. Just the second one we're not sure about, which is Lav Didei. It's not its mother. The question mark is very clearly phrased. Its own mother, it's clear it's the Peter Rechem of. But what about the other mother who's not its own mother? So what do we see? Who's considered to be the mother of the fetus? First one, the one in which it was conceived. Not the second one, the one in which it gives birth. We see the exact opposite. We see the one in which it's conceived, the egg mother, so to speak, is the mother, not the animal which gives birth. But how can you refute this, Raya? What?
No, I'm
but I was just saying, how can you shluck it up?
Yeah.
Well, because Petra could mean something else. Petra could mean the one that that originally opened up the womb. It doesn't have to be.
That's very natural.
That would be the question, whether Petra, what's the meaning of Petra?
In other words, do you mean that it could be it's a
Petra? The first one of God, it's Petra.
Yeah.
Because
the second one, maybe it's Petra. But according to,
it's just like, let's say, if there's a miss.
Yeah.
Okay, so the second one isn't the Petra.
Even the first one is
not. If there's a miscarriage, yes. Right, but that's not so partial. The question was when the miscarriage occurs and what kind of miscarriage it is. But there's another theory which Rabbi Zalman Chaim Gober gives. He says, and this is not explicit in the Gemara, but I think it's pretty implicit. It's in all likelihood we're talking about a fetus, which is that term. It's already fully developed. It's due date time, and therefore that's why we say that it definitely is the Petah Rechem of its own womb. The Shaila is if it's a Petah Rechem of the other womb in which it's going only temporarily, right? That's the question. But Louis Enochanami says, Rabbi Zalman Nechemiah, the Gemara is not talking about a case where, I don't know what the gestation period of a cow is, but the Gemara is not talking about a case where it's an embryo which is transferred from one womb to the other. They couldn't even conceive of such a case at the time of the Gemara. The Gemara is talking about a calf which was moved from one womb to the other womb. Right? What? I don't know how it's possible, but it's more possible that it's a calf than it's an embryo.
It's more possible the other way around.
What?
That it was the full calf when it was transferred.
No, how could they can't transfer it and keep it alive? I mean, it had to be connected to the uterus and this whole business. I mean, that's very unlikely.
It was about 200 pounds.
Yeah. Huh?
It's about 200 pounds.
Let's say it's only about a goat.
I'm telling you,
a sheep. No, I'm saying a goat or a sheep. What, the calf is 200 pounds?
Yeah.
No.
I can't believe it. A cow is about 800-900 pounds. And a baby about 200 pounds.
Really?
Yeah.
That heavy?
It comes out like a human being. It's a big, gigantic cow.
In any event, that's what Zalman Chaim wants to say. He wants to say that it's not necessarily talking about a case. If it was talking about a case where you transferred an embryo from one calf to the other calf, so you'd have clear-cut evidence here that the original mother, the womb mother, is the mother, not the mother who eventually gives birth. But if you say it's talking about a full-blown, full-grown, termed calf, then you have no proof from here. Because it could be the reason why it's poter rechem of the first one and not of the second one, is because now it's born. Even though it's going from one womb to the other womb, but in essence, when it leaves the first womb, that's when it's born. It's a fully grown calf. It's now born. The Shaila is only another question. Maybe we'll say, since it didn't come straight into the world, but rather went into the other womb, so maybe it also potters up the second womb.
Is it supposed to be natural?
Yeah. What?
Natural birth or
Petah Rechem? Natural, no. Caesarean is not a Petah Rechem. But this is not a caesarean. No. We'll see. There is such a question. There's a question like that by a forceps birth. When the birth is through forceps, whether it's considered to be Petah Rechem. But here, obviously, the shepherd somehow manipulated it, that it was natural, there was no tool which was used, just his hands, to move it somehow from one womb to the other womb. Don't ask me how he did it. I don't even know if the Gemara knew how he did it. It was all a theoretical, hypothetical question. There, okay? So in any event, that's Gemara and Chulin. Rav Zalman Nechemia, however, obviously a holding that he can refute the proof from Chulin, comes to several basic conclusions, and let's see his conclusions inside. And the conclusions are on the bottom of page 3. I'm going to skip the first three conclusions, because they're not really directly relevant. Let's go to the fourth conclusion. Avna said b'shah me'es harayon. A father becomes a father at the time of conception. Ve'aim and a mother l'das Rabbi Akiva Eger, according to Rabbi Akiva Eger, not the same age Sarayon and becomes a mother from the time of conception. Vagri Engel Ochich mi Rashi shei not the same rak beleda. Rabbi Yisav Engel proved from Rashi that she only becomes a mother at birth. Aim sholida, a mother gave birth. Avalohi barto, but she did not conceive the child. Misachesa vlad achara aim ayoledes. The child relates to the mother who gave birth, linyan isur chisun bikrove emiletis, in terms of whom the child will now be forbidden to marry. Avamutzer bikrove em shibarta, but he will be permitted to marry the relatives of the mother who conceived him. L'das Rabbi Kivega, because Rabbi Kivega, itachen shalsur gami krovei ha'im shibarto. It's possible that the child is in fact forbidden to marry relatives of the conceiving mother. Now, Vav, im nasa ubar b'meye nochris. Let's say the conceiving mother was a non-Jewish woman, and the mother who gave birth was a Jewish woman. Leman demar uber yerech imo, according to the position which holds that the uber is yerech imo, eino tzorach gerus. It doesn't require gerus. Why? Because the child became, when it grew in the mother, Jewish. However, leman demar lav yerech imo, according to man demar who holds that an uber is not considered yerech imo, tzorach gerus requires gerus. Aval achar gerus, after the gerus, it's interesting contradiction here. On the one hand, the kid requires gerus, because it's not considered to be necessarily part and parcel of the mother, to the extent that since the mother's Jewish, the kid is also Jewish. But on the other hand, after the gerus, it's considered to be the birth mother's child. V'chol ha'im, which is very similar in essence to the Gemara Yevamos, which we saw before. V'chol ha'im lidbo, what can the mother do since uber yat lav yarechimo? She can go to the mikvah. V'aydei kach legayer uber beveistin, she can be megayer the fetus which is within her in basin, again, because we said that is a way of toiveling her child. V'yager min ha'toro, v'yager min ha'raiso. That's Rabbi Kivega, according to Rabbi Kivega. Alright, that's not, the rest of it is kind of tangential.
What would happen if the surrogate mother, the child was conceived by a goy, and the surrogate mother was also a goy, and then she was the guy?
Oh, it's a very good question. Look at 7 here. I know it's in very small letters. I think that's what you're asking. This footnote's from a different page in the Sefer, but I put it down here. Ulfiza gamis yachis achar aviv. Reb Zalman Chaim is bothered. In this case, right, the father was a goy. The mother, the conceiving mother, was a goy. But the surrogate mother is Jewish. Let's say, I'm sorry. The father was a Jew. The conceiving mother is non-Jewish, but the surrogate mother, the mother who gives birth, is Jewish.
What is the difference with the father?
What is the difference with the father? Rabbi Zalman Chaim is bothered in this case. Let's say in this case, normally what do we say by Yisrael who has relations with a non-Jewish lady? We say he's not the father, right? He loses his shame father. But says Rabbi Zalman Chaim, wait a second. In this case, though, true, it was a Jew who had relations with a non-Jewish lady. But when the kid is born, what kind of a mother does he have? A Jewish mother. So in this case, why don't we say that the father is also the father? It's a good question, right? And I think that's a similar question you were just asking. Is it?
No,
which case were you asking about?
No, I was trying to make a distinction here. When the child was conceived by Nochris, and then the...
Who's the father? Does it matter?
I don't care.
Okay.
And the mother was...
Jewish.
No, it was not Jewish.
Oh, it was not Jewish,
okay.
Yeah.
And the surrogate mother was not Jewish. And then there were Megayer.
Yeah.
So what's with the child?
Child's Megayer together.
Child's Megayer together, right?
We're going to have to... Yeah, well.
So, in other words, what I'm trying to say is...
Yeah.
Even though we say uber lav yerechimo.
Yeah.
But, you see, in the other case... When did the child become Jewish?
What's the other case?
When the surrogate mother was Jewish. When did the child become Jewish? As soon as they put it into the child, into the mother. I mean, why should it become Jewish at that time?
Because it comes, if you hold uber yerech imo.
What?
If you hold uber yerech imo, then it's going to become Jewish.
Even if uber yerech imo.
Why not?
Because there's got to be something that makes the child...
Yeah, it got implanted into a Jew. Got Jewish molecules. I don't know. Whatever happened, it got...
Before you say, a mother does not become a mother until the time of birth.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that a surrogate mother would be the mother, not the mother that conceived.
No, that's true, but our question is like this. Well, the question Rabbi Noble is asking is at the time that... If you take the egg, the fertilized egg from the mother who's not Jewish, and you put it into a mother who is Jewish, so what makes the kid Jewish? Why doesn't the kid need gerus? So what Zalman Chaim is saying, enochnami, it depends. If uber lav yerechimo, if it's not considered part and parcel of the new mother, you're right, it needs gerus. But if you're uber yarchimo, the fact that now it was implanted and became part and parcel of a Jewish body is in itself a form of gerus. Ein lecha mikveh gedoyla mizu. There's no greater mikveh than it now becoming part and parcel of a Jewish body and then being born. Okay, but says Reb Salman Nechemi, getting back to the other issue, Reb Salman Nechemi is bothered by a question, he doesn't really have a good answer for it. So again, why, if the father's Jewish, and the conceiving mother's non-Jewish, and then the birth mother's Jewish, so then he has a Jewish mother, he should have a Jewish father. Why is the Jewish father not considered to be the father? So he wants to say that, we have to say, what? It's a chatzitza. You mean there's a hefzik, not a chatzitza. So but according to the way we learned last week, the Ramami Pano, it's very good, because Ramami Pano says that since the at the time that the father gives the zera, the seed, to conceive, the seed then, so to speak, rots, then really no father should be considered to be the father of a child, right? Because it's not, by the time the conception occurs, it's no longer considered to be the seed which emanated from his body, right? Already fermented, or whatever we call it. So, but the point is that nonetheless, the Torah said, by a Jewish father, the chiddush is that the father is the father. By a non-Jewish father, it's taka true. A non-Jewish father is not considered to be the father of his child. They're not fathers of the children. Jewish non-Jews only have mothers, not fathers. But by a Jew is a special chiddush. A Jew with a Jewish lady, in that case I say there's a special chiddush that they're related. But that doesn't apply where the conceiving mother was a non-Jew, because by the time the child was conceived, the seed of the father is considered as if it already dissipated, evaporated. He's not the one who's conceiving it. All right, but that's not really our germane Torah.
Only by the Jews. I mean,
no, by goyim. What? Also by goyim. Goyim and achayv and their fathers.
The Muslims are Ashatish.
What? Because they have marriage. They have marriage, but they don't have, that's not the same thing as yichus.
She's
married to her husband. That is, marriage has nothing to do with bia. That's a separate halacha. Let's not get into that tonight. Ask me later, okay? A special difference, special thing. But the marriage between a goy and a non, between a goy and a goya is considered to be a form of monetary relationship. It's almost like an ownership. They each own each other. It's not, it doesn't have to do with the bia itself, okay? It's a different type of ballgame. Anyway, then he goes on. Yisrael shabal anochris v'nisabra. If a Jew has relations with a non-Jewish lady and she becomes pregnant, nisgairo muberes, and you know what? I'm going to skip the rest of them because it's getting late. Let's look at the rest of the clue just for now. Let's go on to the next issues. There's, however, a problem, and this is what Rabbi Noble really alluded to before. There's somebody who wrote another tshuva in the same. The Dogomir Vava asked the question like this. We know that Loch is, even though Uber Lavi Erechimah, like we said before, if a non-Jewish lady converts, so then a child who's in her womb converts with her. But the Dogomir Vava, which is the Noi Behula, says that's only true if we knew that she was pregnant. What happens if Beis didn't know she was pregnant? In that case, major question. Dogomir Vava says, I don't want to address it here, even though here in Shulchan Aruch where it's brought down, but it's a major issue. We don't know if the conversion is valid then or not. Why? Because it could be that you need a separate conversion on the child. So says Rabbi Kilav, I understand. If you hold that who's the mother, the birth mother, so at the time the child is born, who's the mother's Jewish? So if that's the case, why do you have a shayla on the gerus? Since when the child is born of a Jewish mother, shouldn't be an issue. So the truth is, Reb Zalman Nechemia feels that that's not a contradiction. It could be that the mother is, he said before, quite explicitly, could be that the mother is, in fact, the mother who gives birth, but that the child is a goy, and that the goy needs gerus, and they're not a contradiction. We can live with both things together. Just like we found the case that the mother of the Eishes Af case in the Gemara, that despite the fact that the mother converted midstream, the kids when they're born are considered to be each other's brother. So to here, it's possible to live with this. On the one hand, the mother is the Israelis who gives birth. On the other hand, for technical reasons, the child requires gerus. Not a contradiction. But Rav Kilav holds it as a contradiction. You know, they can't live with those two things together. If the child requires gerus, then the birth mother is obviously not the mother. Can't be. If the birth mother is Jewish, you can't say that the child requires gerus. How do those things, two things square away together? So Rav Kilav wants to say a chiddush. He wants to say normally, who is considered to be the mother? Enochanami, the birth mother. He accepts all the proofs to say that the birth mother is considered to be the mother. Except where the original mother was a Goya. In the case where the original mother, conceiving mother, is a Goya, he holds that Goyus, being a Goy, overrides all other determinants of Yichus. Reb Zalman Nechemi holds, no, they can coexist. You can have one track of determination called whether you're a Jew or not a Jew. And you can have another track of determination, who's the mother. But according to Rav Kilav, it doesn't work that way. If the track of determination of the religion states that this kid is a Goy, then he cannot have considered halakhically to have his mother be the Jewish mother who gave birth to him. So though we, in a case where both the conceiving mother and the surrogate mother were Jewish, we would say follow the surrogate mother in determining motherhood. In a case where the conceiving mother was non-Jewish, according to Rav Kilav, we would say that the kid is not considered to be a kid of the birth mother. That question of Goyus overrides. Okay? Lemaisa. What? Right, in that case.
Whose child is it?
Nobody's. Because when it's going to be Megayer, it's going to be neither of theirs. It's going to be like a.
When the child is Megayer.
What? When the child is Megayer? No parents.
Still
no mother. According to Reb Zalman Nechemia, it's not true though. According to Reb Zalman Nechemia, once the child is Megayer, the Jewish birth mother is the mother. In terms of all halachic issues.
But the child
doesn't
have to be
Megayer. What?
Even if you say the
even who says that's right, even according to Dogum Yerubavu holds that the child might have to be Megayer separately, but still after the Gerus will say, and it belongs to the Jewish mother, that's its true mother. Okay. Now, however, there's the editor of this journal Tchumin, I photocopied the page again, I'm not going to go through it inside, but on top of page 4. Is bothered by several things. He says, listen, the Gemara Nida Daf Lamed Aleph says that where does the child get its traits? The child gets its character traits from the father who puts in certain characteristics with the sperm and from the mother who puts in certain characteristics with the egg. What do we see clearly? Who's the father and who's the mother? The people who gave the raw material. Isn't that pretty explicit, says the editor, or Dr. Rosen is his name. That's one thing he says. Another thing he says is, you know what, I want to draw you an analogy. You know what this is similar to? It's analogous to a case where, let's say I had a tree in my field. And he brings this down for Gemara and Baba Kama. I had a tree in my field, and this tree was swept by a storm into your field where it replanted itself. Its roots reattached itself in the ground, and now it's in your field. Whose tree is it? The Gemara says pretty clearly, it's my tree. Even though it was swept into your field, it's my tree. So here too, says Dr. Rosen, same thing should apply. It should be considered to be the child of the conceiving mother in another environment, in a host environment. But it should be the child of the conceiving mothers.
And it's, but the kid that comes after that.
What?
The
kid that comes after that. You have a good point. Okay, we'll come to that in a minute. We'll come back to that. The final thing he says is pretty good. It seems to be at first glance a pretty good proof. Gemara Baba Kama Daf Mem Tes. Gemara there is expanding on the case of Parshas Mishpatim. In Parshas Mishpatim it says that if a man hits a pregnant woman and she miscarries, then the guy has got to pay for the miscarried fetuses. Who does he pay? The father. If there is no father, says the Gemara, at least according to one opinion, who does he pay? The mother. Says Dr. Rosen, hey, wait a second. If she's not the mother until birth, what right does she have to receive the payment? If you're all like Rashi Megillah, so how can you receive payment for it? It must be that that even before birth, the status of motherhood can be determined. If it can be determined even before birth, we should say that it's determined at the point of conception. Who should be the mother? The mother who conceives. Those are his three attempts to prove that the conceiving mother, the egg mother, should in fact be considered to be the mother of the child. Reb Zalman Nechemia deals with the riots one by one. Says the riot for the Gemara Nida in terms of character traits of a kid, that's Agadita. we do not bring proofs from logic which stems from agadata, even from biological agadata. Even if it makes sense that the DNA comes from the father and the DNA comes from the mother and not from the womb of the surrogate mother. Nonetheless, in halacha, we're dealing with an entirely different set of parameters, and from that, we cannot bring a proof in terms of halachic issues of arayas. And he brings down a Magid Mishnah, which says that arayas are xeris hakasuv. In essence, that's what we're dealing with, arayas here. Who is forbidden to marry this child? The relatives of the conceiving mother or the relatives of the surrogate mother? And that's a halachos of arayas. Halachos of arayas are arbitrary. They're not necessarily connected to biological or logical determinants. They're connected to the Torah's own set of determinants, which we have to determine independently of what we think would make sense. The second thing is that in terms of that plant which was swept in somebody else's field, he says it's more similar to, it's almost your teretz, he says it's more similar to Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim in Hilchos Ma'aser Sheni, I think he says, Chaim Soloveitchik, discusses a case. Discusses a case where not a plant but seeds are swept into somebody else's field. And where seeds are swept into somebody else's field and the seeds sprout and grow, it's a whole different ballgame. Who owns the plants in that case? Says Reb Chaim. The Baal HaSadeh, the person who knows fields they sprout, because he didn't get a ready made plant. He got a plant which grew, he got seeds, and the plant grew in his field. So he might owe a little bit of money for the value of the seeds to the guy from whose field the seeds came. But Lamaisa, the bottom line is that the plant belongs to the person in whose field it was planted. The truth is, if it was halacha, it wouldn't be like that. Can you imagine? If my tree opens up in the summer and the seeds scatter to all four corners of the earth, I'd be able to collect money from wherever a seed falls and causes the tree to grow. So obviously you have to say in such a case that the seed is whatever grows in the seed is independent of the original ownership and belongs to the person in whose field the tree actually grew. And so to here, since in this case what was received by the surrogate mother was just a seed, was an embryo, not a child yet. So therefore, it's considered to be the child of the surrogate mother. Finally, in terms of the made blood, it's no proof.
It's like a monetary.
Yeah, that's the second thing I wrote on the board. Perhaps the mother's relationship to the fetus is not one of motherhood, but one of ownership. She's considered to have the ownership. She possesses the fetuses, and therefore she's paid for them. As the owner who suffered a loss, not as the mother who lost her children. The other way of looking at it is perhaps, and this is a little bit of a chop, he says, maybe the miscarriage is itself the birth.
Maybe what?
The miscarriage is the birth. In other words, why is she considered to be the mother who was hurt, wounded, and therefore miscarried? Why does she get paid when there is no father? Because she became the mother when the children miscarried. That is the time when, you know, these children, Nebuch, were born. So Mimela, she receives the status of a mother of the stillborn children, and that's why she can be paid for the loss which she sustained. Okay, so Tzal Menachem is pretty strong on this point. He is then attacked later on. He's attacked in a later volume of Tchumin by a Rabbi Ezra Bitt, who is a Rebbe in Gush Etzion, who wants to say that that's not necessarily true. He says, listen, Reb Tzal Menachem, maybe it's the conceiving mother who's the mother. True, you have all these proofs. Let's say Rashi and Megillah. Rashi and Megillah seems pretty clear. It says that when is this name mother determined? When the child is born. But maybe the transfer of the embryo from the conceiving mother to the mother which is going to provide the womb, the surrogate mother, is in itself a birth of the embryo. Maybe at that time, any time an embryo or a fetus leaves one body, even if it's to enter another body, it leaves mother A to enter mother B, maybe that is considered to be a birth vis-a-vis the halacha of determining who is the true mother. Hi, it enters a host mother. That's like going into an incubator. At this point, the status of motherhood was determined. From here on in, it's just hosting it. And then Rashi Megillah won't be difficult. Because Rashi Megillah is talking about where there was only one birth. when Esther was actually born. She wasn't born twice. So in Elchanami, when there's only one birth, then it's that birth which determines the mother. But in any case of surrogate mother, in essence, there are two births. There is the conception, and then the transfer from the womb in which the embryo was conceived. And then there's a second birth 9 months later.
In vitro, we didn't have that problem.
What? In vitro, you wouldn't have the problem because there's only one birth, right? It only goes in, so it never comes out of someone.
Then too, the question is, at what point can you consider it a birth?
Yeah.
If they remove it, according to any other halacha, within the first couple of weeks, certainly it's nothing.
Yeah.
If they remove it at that time, you can.
Right. Shlomo Zalman, if we have time, we'll see later on. Shlomo Zalman is bothered by that question. He doesn't address this Rabbi Bick's issue, but the Meiser, Shlomo Zalman says, how are we going to determine when it's considered to be halachically already a fetus to consider it born? 40 days, 3 months, who knows? So in essence, what you're saying is a question. Is he actually going to say, this Rabbi Bick, that before 40 days, when you transfer these cells, how many few cells there are from mother A to mother B, that's considered to be halachic birth to determine the status of motherhood? But nonetheless, that's what he tries to say in order to refute what Rav Zalman Nechemia wrote. What? Give me a minute. And then he raises one question, and another question he brings down, which is quoted from an earlier source. One question he has, okay, that's all that we still not even talk about a fertilized egg. What about an unfertilized egg? Let's say that you have, instead of one mother who conceives, and then transferring the fetus from the conceiving mother to the mother, who then will be the host mother, the surrogate mother, what happens if you take an egg, which is not impregnated yet, it hasn't been fertilized, whatever the word is, and you move it from one woman to another woman. And then the second woman who received the unfertilized egg now has relations with her husband and conceives the child. Who's the mother of the child? Is it the mother who provided the egg, or the mother who was holding on to the egg when the child was conceived? So he says, Rabbi Bick says, pretty good the logic but to him is that in halacha, we would say without question that it's the mother at the time of conception. Despite the fact that the DNA might be from the first mother, the mother in whose ovaries the egg was created, but nonetheless we go after the mother who was holding the egg at the time that it was conceived. But then he brings down, and this is brought down by several places, it's brought down here on page 5 as well. Somebody asked, I don't know who this was, the Shas and Troops, Evan Yakara. Somebody, as you know, Chicago has always been the source of a lot of problems. In Chicago, and it was said that in a meeting of some medical society in Chicago in the year 1911, they claimed, only a few years before your time, they claimed that they found a way to cure somebody's infertility by transplanting an ovary from one woman to another woman. It says, it's brought down, a what? 1911. It's brought down in footnote 7 here on page 5. That somebody asked the Evan Yakara about the Shiloh. So the Evan Yakara was very skeptical. Said, I don't really believe that they can do this. I don't think they can do it today yet either. But in any event, he says, even though I'm very skeptical, but since the person who asked the question, whoever it was a distinguished individual. So he said, out of respect for you, I will answer the question. So he says, in this case, we would say that the child will be the child of the second woman. Why? Because since before conception, the entire ovary, whatever it was transplanted for the second woman, that already becomes part and parcel of her body. Just like if you receive a kidney from some other person, that considers to be now your kidney and not the other person's kidney in your body. So to hear this is considered to be part and parcel of the second person's body, and Mimela, the mother, L'choldover, in terms of all issues, is the second mother, not the first mother. In other words, the mother, the woman in whom it was implanted. Okay? Then there's a slew of Rav Zalman, it's getting late, so I don't have time to go through it in detail, but on the bottom of page 4, Rav Zalman Nechemi goes through in another tshuva which he had about this, a whole bunch of issues. And it seems that his tendency is to be lenient. What do I mean by lenient? To allow the institution of surrogate motherhood to be utilized on a limited basis if it's under direct supervision of the rabbinate. By that we mean that one has, even though Reb Zalman Nechemia tends to rule that the second mother is the mother, and that one should be concerned mostly in terms of halachas of arayas, forbidden relationships and such like with the second, with the mother who gives birth and not the mother who conceives. Nonetheless, he says it always has to be under the jurisdiction, not jurisdiction, but rather under the auspices of the rabbanut, in order to make sure that there should be no problems, that the egg did not come from a non-Jewish non-Jewish woman, and that the egg did not come from a pasul lekol, a woman who was a Reb Mamzeres or such like. If you didn't check it out, in a long tshuva, Reb Zalman Nechemia says that you don't have to be choshish. If you didn't check it out, you don't have to be suspicious that perhaps it came from a non-Jewish lady and perhaps it came from a psulas kol, from a Mamzeres, because anyway, it's probably determined by the birth mother, and there's several other issues here which we can use in order to be mako. But he says, l'chadchila, for sure one should ascertain that it comes from a proper source, and that the source should be known, and that the whole procedure should be done under a heksher. However, there's a very interesting thing on page 5. Page 5, this is from the Nishmas Avram, Dr. Avram Avram. And he, obviously, this is a very new topic. There's very little printed on this. Basically, everything which is printed is in the first 4 pages. Besides, he went around and asked people. He asked Rav Osner, and he asked Rav Eliashiv, and he asked Rav Tzitz Eliezer, and he asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach for their opinions. Now, Rav Eliashiv and the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach all said, l'chadchila, it's best not to do it. But yeah, but if it happens, they all said it's not clear, but in all probability, the mother who gives birth is considered to be the mother in halacha. But there are 2 interesting points here, just a minute. The first interesting point is Rav Vosner. Rav Vosner wanted to say it's definitely usher to do the entire procedure. Why do you want to usher? He wants to say it's usher midoraisa to do this procedure. And this is a fascinating logic. I want to see it with you inside. He says on the top of page 5, what is forbidden to do this l'chadchila, kfisha kosu b'sefer shevet alevi, v'zeh shon hasham, amnon borel the afo b'shir l'fiyan yusaiti embo misa kareis, even though if one did it, one is not chayv misa or kareis, there's no transgression of adultery here, nira sheyesh bo iser asei gemura mi'in in Torah. Nonetheless, one transgresses a mitzvah asei by engaging in surrogate motherhood. What does the mitzvah say? The name is an edge in the Chesam Ralph, it says, V'dovak mishtov alo b'eshes chavero. Now this is real, a pasuk in Chumash. The pasuk says, Akein yazov ishes ovei v'esimo, V'dovak mishtov. A person will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. So we learn out from this that there's an isser of adultery by goyim. From this we learn out, V'dovak mishtov, even a ben Noach, should be cleaved to his wife, v'lo b'eshes chavero, not to his friend's wife. Okay? So we see here, besides that, says Rav Vosner, I have another drasha to make in this pasuk. I myself. What's my drasha? It says in the pasuk, one should cleave to one's wife and be one flesh. Now Chazal say, what does it mean they'll be one flesh? It means they'll create a child, which is from both of them, but in one body. That means that the child will be one flesh, which comes from both of them. Right? V'kayel avlad ha-notzer mishneim. That's the child which comes from the both of them. Gosh kosov rashi dibra maschil mi, v'zeh l'shono, shezera yotze mehem, seed comes from them, shenase besara, oh, v'yim echot bo, from which the flesh of the father and the mother becomes one. That's a quote from Rashi. Look at this. And if you're going to think, the muter minat Torah k'maisa nevol azos, if you're going to think that it's mutter from the Torah to do such a reprehensible activity like surrogate motherhood, it's possible to be cleaving to one's own wife, but become one flesh, not with one's own wife, but with one's friend's wife, by creating a child through the institute of surrogate motherhood with one's friend's wife. Here the Torah is stating the basic principle of marriage in the Torah. That through their marriage and their cleaving to one another, there should be zera yotzei mi ben shneihem, that the child should specifically be only between the father and the mother, or husband and wife. That the father and mother should be one in the child which is created, through these couple, the Torah gave them that they should cleave to each other and not to their friend's wife. He says it's correct and it's pashim shot in the pasuk. So what's he saying?
So he could avoid it by avoiding her.
What?
He could avoid it by avoiding his wife. Although that could be also the denying of the aseva davar.
Right. So what's happening here, basically, Rav Osner is saying, is that since it says in the pasuk, "V'davak mishlav yilu basar echad," that how do you create a child? How do you create a basar echad only by cleaving to your own wife, to cleave to somebody else and make a basar echad, somebody else's wife, which is a possibility through surrogate motherhood, since there's no iser involved, is considered to transgress the mitzvah saseh of creating a child with your own wife. So since creating a child with somebody else's wife is not the maisa, is not the dovak mishto, you're transgressing vayilu basar echad, but rather being dovak in somebody else and creating a child. So therefore, you're transgressing a mitzvah saseh d'oraisa if you have surrogate motherhood. Now the truth is, I don't fully understand, according to Rav Osner, why if somebody has a child out of wedlock with a woman, the panuyim pnuya, it's a woman who's not married with a man who's not married. Why if they have a child, are they not over the isra of a dovak b'ishto vayilu basar echad? Right? It's mashma from the way Rav Osner is learning, one should say about any relationship which creates a child which is not through marriage. That since it's not v'davak v'ishtav el basar echad, then it transgresses that mitzvah.
His objection seems to be that the child is a child of two.
That the child is a child of two?
That's what it, I mean, it's,
I was thinking about married woman.
What?
Married woman.
All right. In any event, if you can resolve it, fine. I just want to point out what he says.
There's blood hanotzer mishneihem.
Yeah.
See, this is what bothers him.
What bothers him?
The blood hanotzer mishneihem.
Yeah.
In other words, that result will be that this child is a product of both from both women.
Yeah.
See, so it's not so much the fact that ishto, that she's got to be legitimate wife.
Uh-huh.
As long as the child comes from one.
So the child comes from one what?
Your question is, supposing the woman can see, they're not married.
Right.
Okay? So there, it's still, even though it's not ishto, but the child is as a result of one man and one woman. It's not notzer mishneihem.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Aha. So his problem is that v'davak b'ishto v'al basar echad means it has to be as a result.
Echad. It's got to be echad, not from
person. You know, it's got to be that there's the one man, one woman, and they're from that one child. Not that there's one man and two women involved in creating a child. That's the issue. If it's one man and one woman, even if they're not married, they're fulfilling v'davak b'isha. The man and woman equals child, as opposed to man plus two women equals child, which transgresses this. Okay, that could be, I said that must be the way he's learning. One last thing is that the Yonis of Benuziel brings down, it's brought down here also on this page at the top on the opposing side. Yonis of Benuziel, your famous Gemara, famous for the Medrash, which says that Leah had a male in her womb, and she figured, if I have another male child, so how many kids is Rachel going to have? Only one male, so therefore she was mispalil, and the child became, instead of a male, it became a female, it became who? Dina. So the Targum Yerdesen Ben Uziel says that Ushmiya Ben Kadom Hashem Tzlusa de Leia, Kodesh Baruch Hu held the tefillah of Leia, Viz Chalifu Baraya. And the fetus is switched, Bemeo. In other words, Rachel was already pregnant with a girl. Vava Yoiv Yosef Ben Mother Rachel, but Kodesh Baruch Hu switched them. And put Yosef in the womb of Rachel, and put Dina in the womb of Leah. So, and who Alochel Maisa? Who was Yosef's mother? Rachel. Who was Leah's mother? Who was Dina's mother? Leah. So, what would you conclude from this Targum Yonasan? Even though at the time of conception, Yosef was the son of Leah, and Dina was the daughter of Rachel, nonetheless, we go by the birth. So obviously this is also agadic, and it's very hard to make a proof from this. But the person who was quoted as Yonasan Muzio I think it's the Evan Yikora, who was asked about the transplant ovary, he said there's no proof, because it's clear to him that the Yonis of Nuziel doesn't mean literally that the fetuses were switched, it's just that the sexes were switched. So there's no absolute proof from here, but nonetheless, it's interesting Yonis of Nuziel for now.